Hello!
Hello!
I am Max Davey.
I'm Tess Davey.
And this is the ADHD Science Podcast.
And this is our second attempt at recording this intro.
Third. Yeah, we're two the other day and then I completely screwed up the record and now we're on our number three. Peek behind the curtain. Purely professional stuff. So today we're going to present to you a double-headed episode.
I know, it's very exciting.
Two guests. Tamsin Crook and Jenny McLaughlin. And Tamsin is basically run a qualitative study, which is not something we've done before. We've not done much qualitative work.
I'm sure we've touched on it before.
Yeah, I think so. But she did a number of interviews with people with ADHD, taking a sort of positive coaching approach. And she just talked to the people about how it was and what worked for them. And it's sort of, it's not groundbreaking necessarily, but it's the sort of thing that people should be doing. Looking at what they're doing, seeing what works. Yeah. Do you see what I mean? It's just absolutely really good, sensible research and the sort of thing that people in that area aren't really doing much of.
I don't know.
As opposed to things like medication and so forth, which is heavily, heavily researched.
Yeah, I mean, I think people tend to ignore the kind of areas of research where you have to take a more qualitative approach.
Yeah.
They don't like to take qualitative approaches, and that's fair enough because it's harder to apply on a wide scale, but yeah. It is important to look at as a part of a bigger picture.
Exactly. So let's look at it now.
As part of a bigger picture.
Okay, well, welcome all. We've got our first double guest episode.
I know, I'm quite overwhelmed.
Two people on the other end of a laptop screen. We welcome Tamsin Crook and Jenny McLaughlin. Tamsin, do you want to just introduce yourself to the listeners and then Jenny will come after you?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Tamsin Crook and I work as a career coach, which I've been doing for about 15 years. Independent career coach working with adults from sort of all sorts of backgrounds. And I started doing research back in sort of 2017 when I was doing a master's program. And then since then, I've sort of continued on the research side of things and starting to work more and more with neurodivergent clients. And I got my ADHD diagnosis back in sort of 2017, 2018, sometime around then. So it's obviously become an area of particular interest.
Yeah. Jenny.
So I'm Jenny McLaughlin. I have been in aviation for over 20 years. I've been working for Heathrow for 17. I've done a variety of jobs in Heathrow, as you can imagine, with somebody with ADHD. I never sit in any role for any length of time. But really love aviation because of it's true, no day's the same. I got my ADHD diagnosis in my early 40s and met Amzin through a mutual friend and offered to support her on the research by being a person that she interviewed.
Yeah, so that's the connection to you in here. Sorry, I was just trying to change the settings on the laptop and Tess has changed my screen to one that has music built into it.
It's
and I can't
and
change it out.
I can't change it out.
Don't know now.
We've tried so hard.
Well.
Yes, it's lovely to have you guys on.
Lovely to have you guys on. We're trying not to have too much canon music randomly in the middle of the episode. Shall we start? Shall we try to be professional podcasters and ask our first question?
Yeah, so we'll head to you, Tamsin, for the question. What question were you answering?
So basically, I went into the research after I was in the middle of doing my master's, and I just got my ADHD diagnosis, and so I was doing what most ADHDers tend to do, which was sort of deep diving into some of the research. And it was just all, I found it all really sort of pathologizing and problematizing and negative. And I was just thinking, this isn't what I want. This isn't what I want to hear. This doesn't feel relatable. And so I wanted to do some more positive research and talk to ADHDers who saw themselves as being successful and find out from them, you know, what their strengths were, you know, how they saw themselves in their careers, where they saw their successes. And I just wanted to approach it with a really positive angle as opposed to sort of assuming that people are, you know, problematic. So there were two questions that I was asking. The first question was about whether, you know, what people saw their strengths as being and how they used those strengths in their work particularly. And then the second question was whether they thought that they were successful because of their ADHD or in spite of it. So those are the two questions that I went in to the research asking.
Okay, wow. And that couldn't be clearer.
Yeah.
And how did you go about, what was your sort of method for finding this out?
So it was definitely qualitative. So I basically wanted to, get relatable narratives because I think we all, you know, you see all these celebrities in the news and in the media, you know, Simone Biles or, you know, Jamie Oliver, whoever it is. And I just thought not everybody is going to be that. But there are relatable people out there that have got a story to tell and that could be really interesting and relatable role models for people who are sort of trying to find out where they fit. So I basically researched by interviewing, it was 17 individuals, adults, and actually the majority of them had only been recently diagnosed in the last sort of 3 or 4 years. But they were sort of aged between about sort of 30, and then my oldest participant was about 69. She'd literally had her diagnosis in her late 60s, and she was
awesome.
Oh my gosh.
So it was a really, really lovely bunch of people who were all really open, really honest, and we had some just really fabulous conversations. And I think for a lot of them, it was the first time they'd had that sort of discussion. They'd had that first opportunity to talk about what was good and what the strengths were, and to be able to talk through some of that stuff. So I think it was, I hope it was a useful and interesting process for me as a researcher, but also for them as participants. That was the intention, so I hope it was.
I think that's fascinating. I think
it's hard not to immediately spring to the next question, which is, fine. You know, what did you find? Because I'm intrigued, and I feel like the intention is so simple. But that's not a bad thing, you know, it's, you know.
Exactly. It's a simple question. You went and found out the answer.
Exactly.
It's how research starts.
It was really about the stories of the participants was what I wanted to centre. That was really important for me. And I think actually what was interesting is that I went into this, not Pollyanna-ish, but a little bit wanting it to be really, really positive and wanting to come out with all the good stuff and all the really great stories. But the reality is nuanced, right? It's, and I think, although, so the approach that I took with it is it's an interview technique called Feed Forward, which was developed by my supervisor and co-author, Almuth McDowell. She adapted it for this kind of interview process. And the way that it works is that you're asking people to think about events or experiences they've had where they've felt that they've been at their best, that they felt really proud of the outcome. It was a really successful experience for them. And then from that, you sort of draw out their strengths and their reflections. So it's a positive psychology informed approach. But actually what came out was that there were some really difficult times and that a lot of the strengths came out of the difficulties. So, and I think it was really important as I was going through that to really recognise that and to respect that and not to kind of whitewash it and then turn this into a really positive focused piece of work, because there were some difficult things that came up with it as well. So it became a much more nuanced piece of work than I was expecting it to, but actually I think more powerful because of that.
Hmm.
I think.
I wonder if it's a good moment to bring Jenny in and ask how you found the process of being interviewed and how and what you felt. I mean, first of all, some of the things that you might have said, what you feel your strengths are, but also how you found the process of going through this feed forward interview with Tamsin, what it did for you.
So I think up until that point in my career, I've been through a lot of different HR, people orientated interventions, should we call them, where they were attempting to get me to align with what the corporate world thinks are the best skills you need to have in order to be able to go up in your career. And I could do some, but not all. And so I'd been left with a feeling of not quite being good enough up until that point. And some of the stuff I discussed with Tamsin around that was around actually having the ADHD diagnosis awakened me to the fact that that wasn't a failing in myself. That was just that I looked at my brain worked in a different way to other people, and that was okay. I didn't need to fit into that box whereby I needed to do things the same as everybody else. And through doing the interview and through being questioned in that way and really starting to be honest with myself around what were the things that I was good at? What were the areas whereby I'd seen that I'd been able to achieve something that maybe some of my peers haven't been able to do? Because actually the way I see things, the way I approach things is very different. And actually that works in some scenarios and is a strength. And I think there's two or three things reflecting back on the process and looking back on the notes that's really kind of embedded that feeling is that I think when you are challenged in the way that those with ADHD commonly are because the world isn't designed for them, you need to develop a growth mindset. You need to be able to fail fast and learn your strategies to improve and grow. And if you can work with that growth kind of mindset, what it means is that actually you can adapt to a world that's very complex and very difficult and challenging for a lot of us. And you've developed skills and strategies to be able to deal with that growth mindset because it's something you've naturally had to do since day dot. And I think that really came out from you know, talking to Tams and going through the process. And the best thing the biggest smile on my face was getting the notes back and reading them. Because so often when you're in, for me anyway, quite often I will have, you know, do things like this and talk to people and I can't remember what I've said afterwards, and it's so frustrating because I know I said some really great things but I couldn't repeat them because in the full flow of being authentic and natural and not thinking before I speak means I don't remember afterwards. So getting the notes back and reading back and go, oh, I said some really cool things, that was really good. And having been able to read them and see them really sort of embedded it, because actually I'd said it, I'd read it, I believed it, and actually it helped me to continue to doing those things afterwards.
Mm. That's quite therapeutic, that, isn't it? It's beautiful.
Well, in a way. And do you think that it's funny, it's getting the notes back being so therapeutic is so interesting, isn't it? Because it's like reflecting yourself in as positive a light as possible, in a way, could be really, it's potentially got very lots of kind of therapeutic benefits. Although I can see how it might flip the other way, but I imagine, yeah, that potentially could be very helpful. Tamsin, what do you think? Is that to do with the way that the feed forward method works? Is that kind of
I'd like to hear more about that. So it's really, really interesting because there has also been research with ADHDers that they are terrible at questionnaires. They are really bad at filling in like strengths profiles or, you know, all these awful psychometrics where there's like 150 questions all asking something a little bit similar and it's really binary. And it's like, well, I don't know what my answer is to that because it depends on this context or it depends on that context. Partly it's a contextual thing that makes them a nightmare to complete, but also they're really boring. So by the end of it, you end up just ticking anything just to get it over and done with, or you don't finish it. So actually psychometrics aren't that great for ADHDers. And the brilliant thing about this process is that because people are coming up with their own stories of what they've experienced, you are reflecting back the words that they are using.
And that's the feed-forward part.
That's the feed-forward. So that you hear, so what they're hearing is strengths that they can actually feel some ownership of. Because if you sort of show people a list of strengths and say, which is you, you know, if you've got sort of low self-esteem or you've struggled with stuff, it's really hard to sort of say, well, I'm good at that. But actually, if somebody tells me a story about something that they have done that they felt really proud of or that has been a real achievement for them, I can work with them to pull out some of those themes and some of those strengths and say, oh my goodness, it sounds like you're really good at whatever it might be. And then for the individual themselves, they will hear that and it will resonate with them much more strongly than just ticking a list or getting a profile back on a load of questions that they've sort of forgotten what they'd responded to. And it doesn't, you don't feel that same sort of connection to the outcome. So for that reason, I think it is really, really important. And the other part of it for the full process that we didn't use quite so much for this research is also the question about what else is going on around you while that's happening. So in my coaching work, I'll continue and I'll use the whole process, because that's really important, because then you're drawing out what the contexts are that people need in order to be able to use their strengths as well as they can. Because a strength in and of itself isn't a positive thing necessarily. It's yeah. It's a trait, right? So you could say that, you know, honesty is a strength potentially, but if you use it in the, you know, to the wrong degree in the wrong context, can be a bit brutal, right? Or it can have an unintended,
get you into trouble, certainly.
Exactly. So it's all, or even something like humour, which I think is quite common in ADHD, because you have that sort of quick wit and that ability to make connections and a bit of impulsivity. But it can also be used as a deflection or as a self-deprecation. And so it's helping people to realise how can you use that strength of humour in a way that serves you and that, you know, that works really well for you, what needs to be happening around you. So it just gives a really, I think, a really rich way of, and a respectful way of talking to people about their strengths and what works well for them and in what contexts. So what support they might need around them or what environments work for them.
Anything to...
Not particularly. That was interesting.
So I suppose you got 17 fascinating stories and 17 really interesting processes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you summarise and synthesise all of that information? Can you synthesise?
Yeah, was my question. I did have a question, but you put me on the spot. Yeah. It was, how do you turn this, because I assume you had so much information from the interviews, how did you turn that into like some comprehensive data, not data, but, you know, for want of a better word.
But useful outcomes. Basically, it was it's a process called thematic analysis, which is where you basically go through the transcript. So you create a transcript of all the interviews and you go through and you pull out the words and the themes that are coming up and you compare them across all of the transcripts. And obviously it's qualitative research. So none of it is, it's not like you've got hundreds of thousands of responses and you can get like a statistical analysis out of that. It's not that. The point of qualitative analysis is, to get sort of the richer stories and the insights from individuals. And then you might choose to use those insights as a starting point for if you want to do some statistical analysis, after that. But what I created was a model, basically, because it sort of, you could see the different ways of how strengths were recognised. So there were core strengths that came out across all the themes, which were the really the ones that people really associate with ADHD. So one of the lovely quotes was, the things we ADHDers do best is out of an emotional response. Yeah, that was a really lovely one. People would talk about ADHD energy or ADHD, so they would connect it to the ADHD. And those are the ones that they got really passionate and excited about. And then there were the strengths that sort of came out of difficulty. So things like resilience, they'd been used to, they talked about being used to failing. And so you get up and you do it again and you just get used to it. So you can see resilience as strength, but that's something that they've had to develop as opposed to choosing to develop. So sort of in the center of this model, we have the, what the different types of strengths are. And then we were looking at the sort of evolution of success. So the diagnosis was a really important part for everybody, basically, that I spoke to. That sort of really helped them to sort of flip how they saw their success. So some really interesting responses before that diagnosis, where either they don't believe that they are successful and they'd be really sort of doubting whether, it's nothing more than anybody else would have done, etc. or a little bit what Jenny was saying about not remembering. So there was one guy who was talking about he just thought he was always lucky, and he was that everything had happened by luck, because he couldn't. I love the way he put it. He said, "You know, I didn't see the breadcrumbs that I was laying down, because he'd forgotten all the things he'd done to get to the point where he was successful. So he just assumed it was luck," which was such a lovely way of putting it. And so there's that sort of thing before the diagnosis. And then after the diagnosis, it was that kind of reframing, that sort of looking at your life through a different lens, and actually getting to the point where you can start identifying your strengths and you can start recognizing where you need to be in order to do well, what you need around you, to the point where there were people who were really, really proud, of their ADHD, and just saying, look, when I can, pull all the things together and I'm in the right place, what I'm doing is magic. It's fantastic. Particularly a lot of people working in, sort of emotional response. So, a lot of social entrepreneurs doing some really fantastic stuff, because they're really driven by that. That emotional response to the work that they're doing. It was just a really nice narrative that you can see in the model. And I've got a lay summary of it on LinkedIn if people want to have a look at it. It was the research is open access, because it was really important to me that everybody could access it. And then I also did a lay summary on LinkedIn for people who needed the TLDR.
Well,
the whole paper, but the model's in there, so you can track that and see what that looks like. But that diagnosis point was really important for people.
Yeah. Did you? I want quickly about to Jenny. Did you find that? Did you find that the diagnosis was a tipping point in how you saw your strengths, how you saw how they interact with your?
No, 100%. I would say prior to diagnosis, I considered myself to be broken. You spend quite a lot of your time being told what you're not quite good enough, whether that's in performance reviews or, previously in education or whatever else. It's a lot of it is about you're good, but you'd be even better if. And actually, the diagnosis gave me that opportunity to start being kinder to myself and actually being more of an advocate to say, but I'm never going to be good at that. And look at all these other things over here that I am good at that no one else can do, the magic part, the things that just come naturally to me and I can do that I don't even have to think about doing. These are all the things you need to give me, and so I can be of value. If you give me this stuff over here, that's never going to happen. And what I found was by advocating to myself and being kinder to myself, not trying to do the things I knew I couldn't do, I found a support network beneath me and around me that actually was happy to do those things, because those are the things they were good at. And what I could take on were the things like public speaking or, the curious questioning or any of those kind of stuff.
The connecting
with others.
Jenny's an amazing connector.
I could do all of that. Naturally, that wasn't a challenge for me. And I love doing that. And it's what gets me up in the morning. If someone else can do my spreadsheets and my PowerPoint slides, happy days. If that's what brings them joy, then that's what you do to create a team, isn't it? That's what that diversity of thought, that diversity of abilities is what makes great companies. Right. And actually I needed the diagnosis to allow myself to move into that space and not only advocate for myself, but advocate for others and be that role model for others to say, it's okay to say this isn't designed for you. It's okay to say, I'm not good at that, but I'm great at these things. That's what makes us human. Mm-hmm. And I think we forget the human so much in our everyday lives because we all trying to be the mythical average that doesn't exist.
Mm.
And I think the bit for me, sort of paraphrasing my own quote, but the label, as it's sometimes called, is so I can explain to others why I can do some things and not do others. It's not for me. It's not to tell me what I can and can't do. It's to explain to others and advocate for myself that these are the things that I'm good at and not because of these reasons. And I think what was important was learning that and understanding and embedding that into how I operate in the world now.
Mm.
Okay, I think that's great. And I think
there was a really lovely one of the other women that I spoke to. She had this really fantastic explanation. When she got her diagnosis, she had found that she was often getting herself into conflict situations and she described it to me that she and she we were sitting opposite each other, and she wrote a six on a piece of paper and showed it to me across the desk and said, "What do you see?" And I was like, "Well, I see a nine." And she's like, "Yeah, I see a six." So I'd be having these conversations, and I'd be like, "I see a six," and they see a nine. "I see a six," "I see a nine," and they'd be sort of fighting it out. And she said, "And when I had the diagnosis, I realised that the six and the nine weren't necessarily the issue. It's how do we get to the eight?" And then that was how she sort of realised that she's always going to see things slightly differently, and that isn't necessarily a problem. But having that diagnosis made her realise there was a reason why she saw a six and somebody else saw a nine, so she could take that sort of personal issue out of it. It was just it's not that they think I'm wrong, it's just they see it differently. And so that was really important for her, and I thought that was a really lovely way of explaining it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I would have gone for the 10 personally. I mean, these people, they just haven't got a vision.
Just not ambitious enough.
See a one.
Yes, you're right about the third question, which is, I think you were just talking, Jenny, about how this interacted with, how your ADHD interacted with your career. So how do you think, what implications do you think this research has for people working with people with ADHD?
I think, and I hope, that what the research does is show how quite often we are gravitated towards and work with common neurotypes. So people who are common to us who think in the same way, because that's easy to do. And what it shows is that actually there are strengths to different neurotypes, and we have to find a way to navigate that space so that we can support each other and recognise that we all communicate, process, experience the world differently, and that's okay. And actually, by supporting each other, we can bring the best out, the strengths out in each of us. And I hope that's what the research is resonating, that it's not the ADHD of, well, it's poor timekeeping, it's poor this, it's poor that. It's actually ADHD as great communicators, you know, great connectors, people who can join dots, all of this kind of stuff, which you can't teach. You can learn and develop, but you can't teach it. And I think having that kind of that research that actually backs up what some of us already know, you know, I personally think, and I am biased in this, think it's worth its weight in gold.
Okay. And what do you, Tamsin, same question to you, I suppose.
Yeah, I think what I really wanted from the research was for ADHDers to feel seen and to feel understood. And I did get some lovely feedback from that happened. And I think it's important that people who are working with ADHDers get to know the person in front of them and actually spend some time with them to say, yeah, what is it what are your strengths? How can I support you to be at your best and to help remove some of the barriers sometimes that make it really difficult for ADHDers? I've been doing some work over the summer, doing some writing around that. It's just what is it that needs to happen in a working environment that we can focus on these ADHD strengths and allow people to use them to their best ability, because there's so much wasted talent and so many wasted strengths of people who've got so much to offer, but because the environment that they're working in or because the job they're being made to do doesn't play to those strengths, they're not able to do it to the best of their ability. So I think it's just about opening people's minds to, you know, what is possible, to recognise strengths and to recognise how they can play a part in actually being really important for people by providing that support and environment. I think I hope that that's what's going to come from it. And it's a starting point for a conversation. You know, I think no piece of research acts alone. It's all sort of an incremental building towards. And I think actually over the last few years, I think the narrative within the community is much more positive and much more strengths focused anyway, which is brilliant. And there's much more around neurodiversity at work, and there's much more insight around neurodiversity coaching and, you know, all of those sort of things, which means that people are getting much better support you know, in work and, you know, finding people that can support them outside work as well.
All right. I think that answers it for me.
What about the second? Should we do the
I know. The next one? I'm on it.
All right.
Fourth question. sorry, I'm a bit tired. I'm recovering from my sickness. So what does this mean for ADHD people themselves?
I don't know. I think what do you think as someone who is doing the research?
I think that what it means, I'll say what it means for myself and then I'll like expand it out. What it meant for me was a real clarity that how I'd got through my career, what I had achieved through my career wasn't despite of the ADHD. Actually, it was because of it. And then recognizing that allowed me to understand where next, or if I'm in a moment or a time where things aren't working and actually I'm feeling stuck, to go back to the discussions and the research and the conversations I had and go, well, in that paying it forward and in those moments whereby I really felt valued and proud, what was in it that worked for me and how can I get back there? And I think too often we see our careers as linear. We do this, we jump up to the next stage, we jump up to the next stage, we jump up to the next stage. I think for ADHD, it's very much more squiggly, because actually, if you can understand it's not to the detriment if you're taking a step sideways or even a step down or changing careers altogether, if that's what's going to work for you, give you that joy, you're going to find a new passion, you're going to do a new thing that's going to allow you to develop new strengths, new skills, etc. That's not a bad thing. So I think, I hope, expanding from me out to others, what it does do is justify that ADHD careers aren't linear. And actually, that's not a detriment to us or the workplace or society as a whole, because we've got so much to offer. If we're learning and growing each time we jump, that shouldn't be seen as being a bad thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it all comes back to the central point, I suppose, of all of this. This is my draw, is that it's so important to acknowledge the difficulties that are brought by this condition, but to focus on the positives, particularly in a career setting. You know, everyone always talks about, you know, you go to the job interview, they're like, what are you good at? Tell us about yourself. You don't need to say you have ADHD. You shouldn't need to say you have ADHD as a warning. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I see what you mean.
Because I actually test for your right. I think what this process does is, if you can work with people to really identify what their strengths are, then they get to that interview, and the response that they give is really informed because they've actually talked about it and they've spoken about it and they've worked it out and they've got that narrative, which they might not have had otherwise. So they can sit there and say, "I'm really good at this. I'm really good at that." And what I really need around me in order to do my best is X, Y, and Z. You know, really, the ADHD diagnosis shouldn't come into it, because you want an organisation to be, you know, focused on what is, you know, what is possible, and doing that work around. So, you know, you shouldn't need a diagnosis to be able to say, can I wear headphones when I need to concentrate? You shouldn't have to add because I've got ADHD. It should just be like, you know, I focus better if I've got my headphones on. Or actually, can I just sit in a quieter area? All of those sort of things to help people support what they're good at, you know, should just be in place. But I think what Jenny was saying about that, the success coming from the things that you do really well, that was a really key tenet of the research, that the real authentic success that people were really proud of was because they were really using their strengths. The success that they'd achieved despite the ADHD, or in spite of the ADHD, was really hard won. There was a wonderful woman that I spoke to who was a healthcare practitioner. She'd done loads and loads of research, really well published. And she said, I just look at my CV and I just think, my God, that took so much work. It was so hard. And so she couldn't recognise that success in herself, even though anybody else would objectively see this list of publications and think, oh my goodness, you're amazing. But because it was so hard for her, she didn't see it as a success.
Because I would almost sometimes, for my own CV, say the opposite, that some of these things I've just fallen into. And so I don't count them as success, because I just fell into them.
It's like what you said,
is
about
that the breadcrumbs thing?
Saw it all as luck. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because you've been doing all sorts of things.
Mm. Whenever people ask me about like my A-level results, I'm like, yeah, I don't know how, because I'm quite happy with what I got.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, I don't know how I managed it. And then I forget all of sleepless nights.
Working and being good.
Yeah, and I just, that bit is just gone. All I remember is going into the exam
feeling
like I hadn't done enough. But actually,
I
feel like we discredit ourselves.
I think also we're in a space now where there's a lot of talk about accessibility, about, you know, designing for and being mindful of a lot of different, you know, whether it's menopause or whether it's, you know, ensuring that we've got the right stuff for, you know, older age and all of that kind of stuff. That's all talked about, but there's still a stigma and a difficulty for those who don't have the conditions to understand the requirements are just as valid when it's something to do with your mind. Actually, it doesn't have the same weight. And I'm hoping, like with the research and further research that's done, that actually that weight is there, that if you are asking for adjustments to be at your best, that's as valid as any of the other things that we're already working towards.
So it's a sort of tool for self-advocacy in some ways, the kind of the model that you've developed to an extent. Mm. Would you say that that's true?
Yeah, I think what I hope people can do, it's not like a you will follow the circle, you will follow that evolution. It's very, and I think people can change where they are, you know, depending on the day, depending on where they are in their own mind as to how they're feeling. But there is definitely that, I relate to that. I can see myself in at that point. So what is it I need to do to get to that point? And I hope it's just a relatable way of thinking, who am I? What am I good at? Where are my strengths? What should I be doing? One of the reasons I did this research is because at the time, you know, there really wasn't much training or understanding in the careers coaching field at all. And the reality is that, you know, neurodivergent people are really overrepresented in, you know, in any career coaching client base, because they often are struggling in work. And it can be really damaging for a neurodivergent person to go to a career coach and for that coach not to have an understanding about what might be going on from a neurodiverse perspective. I think what you can do with stories and what you can do with qualitative research, which is much harder with statistics, is you can really build that connection and that empathy. And so when people read the quotes that have come from the participants, I think it does get people. I think they're like, oof, wow, okay, that's not something I'd thought of before. And so I think building that empathy and that understanding for, you know, for coaches, for managers, for anybody who's reading it and working with ADHDers, it's also really important that they understand what's going on and that they can see what part they can play to make it better. And benefit from the strengths of the people in their team.
I think it's so important to have a variety of types of research on these topics, because obviously statistics are good for showing the scale and the size of the impact and all this stuff, but you need those personal human stories so that people can connect to it and understand, you know.
And there's a first bit of qualitative research as opposed to quantitative that we've covered.
I think it's the most qualitative. Okay, there's been other ones that we've looked at.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of stories in this. I think the quotes were brilliant. It was so hard to choose which ones to pull in because there was so much that came out that was just, I just thought, really, really powerful. Mm-hmm. So it's worth reading, if only for that, I think.
I have a question which is related to what you've just been saying about coaching, because coaching is a, you know, career coaching or personal coaching, whatever sort of coaching, is a growth industry around neurodivergence generally. How does your research and your write-up and your model, how does it help the person who is thinking about embarking on coaching? How does it help them to engage with coaching or even to choose a coach?
Okay. So I think what I hope it would give people hope for is that there are people out there that get them and that who want to understand them and want to help them understand themselves, and that they can get to a point where they might. So an example, I've worked with a client in the past who really, really struggled to come up with a response to, tell me about a time where you felt that you're really at your best and you're doing a really good job. They really struggled with that. And so rather than keeping asking and, putting pressure on, which can feel really overwhelming, it was asking, I said to her, okay, tell me something that you would really love to do. And so we sort of flipped it to think about something in the future. And I asked her how she would approach this thing that she wanted to do. And we sort of broke it down. And so from that, I was able to get some strengths there and say, oh, well, you're clearly really good at logistics and organizing and planning, and that's really important for you. And just even in that really short conversation, you can see people's confidence increasing because somebody's recognizing something in them that maybe other people haven't recognized, and maybe they haven't recognized in themselves. And I think that's really, really important as a neurodivergent person, that you feel seen, because I think so often you feel like you don't belong, and so often you feel that people don't understand you. And I think it's a really powerful connection opportunity for people to build on for what their thoughts are going forward. So I think I would like to think that it offered hope to people that there's a way of understanding themselves better.
Mission accomplished, I suppose, is what you kind of, in a way, what you set out to do.
Hope so.
Should we do our final question?
Well, I think so.
Okay.
So now that you have mission accomplished, as my dad said, what's your next question?
So my next question is, so I'm currently doing another master's and a psychology master's.
You know, you only need one. You do know
I
that.
I know. Several is really important. Just keep doing.
Yeah.
it's the one I should have done 30 years ago. Wow. I'm doing it now.
This is the avatar.
Exactly, if only. So what I'm really interested in is decision making and ADHD. How ADHDers make decisions, what their experience is of making decisions.
Jenny's just shaking her head. I want to bring Jenny in on this one. She's shaking her head. How ADHD is. Anyway, fine. We'll come to Jenny in a minute.
I won't bring her into the next bit of research then.
You've qualified yourself now.
I think it's a really interesting point, because one of the strengths is, and what I found, is that we don't make decisions in the way that others would call them decisions. So because we don't go through the same process, because we don't have the filters or the whatever else. So for me, somebody will give me the information and I'll sit and I'll go, is that enough information? Yes, no. If it's enough information and I'm confident that I will stick by what I've just got about to say, that's it. And other people are like, how can you do that? And I'm like, well, how can you sit and monitor it and do 40 different meetings and seek to
talk to
Oh, man.
You know, like, just get to it. You know, I'm bored now. Come on.
Get to it. Get to the point. Just do this. It's fine.
Exactly. So I laugh and I do the head shake, because I think part of it is about, sometimes it's a paralysis because you don't know the parameters in what you're trying to make the decision in, and the weight of the decision is so massive that you're just never going to get there. Other times you're completely the other end of the spectrum and you're like, yeah, I'm doing that. And you're like, what? You can understand how you've computed about 100 different things in your head all in one go in 30 seconds, and you've decided what you're going to do, and you can justify it afterwards when you've had time to sit back and think about it. But you just know.
You just know. It just feels right.
Yeah. I have a distinct memory of us talking to a researcher about something similar to this. I don't remember who it was, unfortunately. Sorry about that.
It's all right.
But I remember it being so interesting. So it would be great to see what you come out with at the end of this process.
Mm.
But it's still very early days. I need to get it approved first. But that's the thought. That's the thought. Because it's important with careers. It's, you know, how people make their decisions and what they're doing. And it's something that is often quite difficult for some people. So it will be interesting to see how that works.
Fab. Well, you must come back and tell us about that when you get there. Because it's exciting, of course, because Tamsin, you're the first, your first listener and also interviewee.
Show that off.
Well, I think probably other people. I think what's exciting.
I think you've got other listeners.
We'll have to. Yeah, but we haven't actually managed to get any of them to come and talk to us. Okay. So yeah, that's really, really fantastic to have you on, and thank you so much for coming, Jenny, as well.
What's
next for you, Jenny? What's your? Because we've asked Tamsin, what's next for you?
So at the moment, I am leading some work in the construction industry about how we can change the culture to be more inclusive.
Lovely.
Yeah. So doing lots of work in and around that, being totally troublesmaking and annoying and alienated and all.
There must be so many people with ADHD in the construction industry, undiagnosed.
There's a piece of work out at the moment by the Federation of Master Builders that reckons it's around.
Not the Lego Master Builders. Just Tess's eyes lit up. She's like,
it's probably higher in the Lego.
You're talking about something very important, and now I'm just thinking about the Lego movie.
I knew that's where she was going.
But it was around 25% those who were either diagnosed or believed that they were and hadn't got a diagnosis yet. So it's massive, and it has massive safety implications, performance implications.
Yeah, it makes huge sense.
If we don't design for them, so
yeah,
brilliant. Well,
holy moly.
Holy moly indeed. Before Tess and I, there's always a point every episode when Tess and I start to go off on the tangent, and the Lego movie is such a tempting one. we're just going to stop it there. Thank you very, very much. Have the Lego movie episode another time. For Christmas, we'll just talk about the Lego movie. All right. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Great. Well, hope you enjoyed that. Tess, you're just off to work.
I am off to work. I'm going to my job. And you're going to plug the Facebook.
I'm going to plug the Facebook group.
The Facebook group.
Yes, so we have a Facebook group, ADHD Science Podcast. If you just search that up and apply, then the administrator, who is me, will allow you entry into the group. Basically, it's a place for us to discuss the issues that come up during the episodes, and a place where I will be sourcing questions for Q&As in the future. Probably won't really go anywhere else except the group, because there's enough people in there who ask brilliant questions. So if you want a question answered on this pod, you have to go and join the Facebook group, basically. And if you hate Facebook, I don't disagree with you. But it's just one of those things. It's sort of the air we breathe.
You know, I hate capitalism. Here we are. I'm off to work. It's how it goes.
All right. So shall we say goodbye?
Okay. You're being so formal about this.
Am I?
Shall we say goodbye? I don't want to push anything. Yes, we can say goodbye.
All right. I'll just go back in my box. Bye.
Bye.